want a lot for Christmas. There are just 5 things I need. Some Snow White heroin, some Zanny's works, weed and speed. I just want to overdose underneath the Christmas tree. Hey Santa, if you find me dead, please, please don't narcan me. Then I'll have to cop again. I love you, heroin. All I want for Christmas, all I want for Christmas is you. I love you, I love you, heroin. I love you, I love you.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Wednesday Dose of Dopey, the podcast on drugs, addiction, and dumb shit, as our 5 days of dopey in December continues. I don't know if we're going to do 5 days of dopey in January. I mean, I love the numbers, but the work is it's hard to keep up with. And today is Christmas Eve day, and I'm surrounded by presents, and I'm feeling a lot of gratitude. Feeling a lot of love and gratitude. I want to do just a fake meditation every time I start talking in woo-woo positivity. But let's just say the light in me recognizes the light in you. And this morning we did a fucking dopey recovery Zoom, and it's for patrons. And if you want to listen to this episode without the ads, you go to www.patreon.com/dopeypodcast. But the recovery Zoom was very significant this morning, and it was very sweet. And if you're looking to go and you're a patron, you should come to our Wednesday morning Zoom. It's every Wednesday at 9 a.m. New York time. And if you're dying to come and you're not a patron, you should join Patreon. You can get stuff, stickers and socks and hats and Patreon Zoom and the recovery Zoom, good times, bonus videos. Patreon's amazing. And then, strangely enough, this episode of Dopey is brought to you by the good folks at Curious Elixirs. And Curious Elixirs makes delicious non-alcoholic beverages. And they sponsored us for DopeyCon, and they're sponsoring us for this show. And check them out at CuriousElixirs.com. They make delicious beverages. Are you not drinking? You deserve something curious. They have adaptogens and organic materials and so many different flavors. So check them out at CuriousElixirs.com. We got a note from Montana in prison that I want to read. It's from, I don't know, 10 days ago. Happy for Dave. Happy first day. And this is through our friend Nicole Cargo. Happy first day of Hanukkah. We have an Orthodox Jew guy in my dorm who also helps me with my Toastmasters stuff. Today he explained the Jewish calendar to me, and it made me think about you. There's another kosher guy at Toastmasters and at AA I talked to. He's old, but there's something very attractive about him. He's an old man, so I don't mean physically. He's interesting. Both of them are well-spoken, educated, and professional types, which raise automatic potential sex offender red flags. It's a fucked-up stereotype, but in prison, if you're smart and successful, it's like, what are you doing in prison? Often it's DWI, a lot of times DWI causing a death or serious accident, sometimes murder. But my first thought, and a lot of people's, is child molesters. Blame law and order. Whatever the case, I hope they're murderers and not molesters, because I like both of them. Anyway, my mind is still kind of in a fucked up place. I gave a speech this weekend, my first ever. I was really nervous, and I sucked, but I did it and I passed. It was an icebreaker. So basically a 4 to 7 minute speech about who I am. I didn't know what to say, which people think should be easy. But for the past 20 years, I've been on drug addict shit. I made notes about smoking crack in Fort Worth and being kidnapped in San Antonio, being sent to prison twice in New Braunfels. But in the moment, that didn't feel appropriate. I don't know much of myself outside of being strung out. What is my idea of a perfect afternoon? Nodding out under a tree at the park overlooking a lake with little ducks. What's my favorite way to kill time? Smoking crack in the bathroom. This is an amazing email. I have to write Montana and thank him. The best idea for a first date? Marathon meth sex with a stranger in a room at a dangerous motel. I'm fucked up, you know? That's great for dopey and an AA meeting or something like that, but not for a group of strangers. But I did it. I qualified and I'm on to my next project. This time I can talk about anything. Last week I registered for college. The degree is mental health and counseling. They call it the LCDC program. I'm excited to start and see where that goes. The possibility of being able to get out and never having to work at some factory or construction site again thrills the fuck out of me. I had one construction job I loved. We put in the underground utilities for new subdivisions. I was really good at it too, but I hated waking up early in the morning to go to work on cold mornings. I actually worked for the company twice. Once I quit because I was really high on ice, and the second time I got fired for nodding out on the job site. But I'm too old for that shit anymore. I'm only barely 33, but fuck that working outside in the extreme cold and extreme heat and waking up at 5 a.m. to be at work by 7 or by 6. This is a life-changing opportunity for me as while I'm here. There's nothing really exciting going on here. I spent all weekend making my space all badass. I have the coolest cubicle. I hate to say it, but I love my little cubicle. I've got a picture of an ancient Buddha statue and the word heroin tagged on the ancient wall behind him. That's a long story, but it's my creation and it's fucking cool. I've got a miniature teddy bear and stuff wrapped with comic books, a green light and stuff I have to do. I spend most of my free time making stuff. I'll find something someone threw away and I find a way to repurpose it functionally, but also decoratively. Tonight, I got an empty Tums container. Who knows where that'll take me? I built a speaker box out of an empty Splenda box and wrapped it with comic books, and that's pretty cool. They'll probably take my shit first chance, but I'll just remake it. I want to get a dopey stencil and make a tag, and I want to get a dopey stencil made and tag part of my wall with something dopey. That's all I've got for now. I hope the holidays are good for everyone, Montana. What a great note from Montana. If you guys want to get a hold of him, write me at dopeypodcast@gmail.com and I'll get you the information. It's a little difficult, but I've fallen out of the habit of communicating with Montana again. But I love that note, so I will write him and thank him. And it's Christmas. Does Christmas mean anything to you guys? I don't know. I think Christmas definitely means something to everybody in this country. He alludes to how Jewish I am in his email, but I'm 100% Jewish, but my family is not. And I've always loved Christmas. I've loved the sentimentality of it. I love the togetherness of it. I love the hope. I love the idea of peace on earth and goodwill towards men. I love TV. I love food and I love presents. I fucking bought my family more presents than I've ever bought before. And I think this year, I feel I don't care what I get, which is that old St. Francis business that it's better to, it's the old Christian doctrine, basically. It's better to give than receive, and it's better to understand than be understood. But I'm in my new highly spiritual place, which I'm sure will not last. I'm glad the Nick Reiner tidal wave has subsided a bit, at least for us. Obviously, for him, for Nick, and for his brother and sisters, it's got to be fucking horrible. So my love and my heart goes out to all those Reiners and their friends and family. And I apologize if releasing him on Dopey caused anybody any pain. In any way, that was not my intention in the slightest. And today on the show, we have my friend Rachel Heckman. She is she's like a Bostonite who's become a New Yorker. She's traveled, I think she's from New Jersey, Boston. She's traveled all over the place. She's now a New Yorker, a de facto New Yorker. She has a sober Instagram called Sober in Central Park. And more importantly than any of that, she's helped us do DopeyCon for the past, I want to say 4 years. And she's been instrumental in DopeyCon getting better and better. And she's my friend. And she came to my dad's house. It was actually the day we found out about the Nick Reiner story. And I was a little distracted when we recorded it. But I was so happy to record with Rachel. And here is me and Rachel from last Monday. What are they going to pay me?
What did we tell them?
We didn't tell them, did we?
I think we sent them the sponsorship deck.
Okay. So they'll pay me something.
They'll pay you. Hey. Yeah, yeah.
We'll try everything if you want.
Okay, so I brought... These ones are cold. The other ones aren't cold. I just brought them for show.
Which is the cold ones?
These four are the cold ones.
Can we open them like this?
Yeah.
All right. What? How could you possibly be nervous?
I don't know, because I'm just like, I have to be like my heart is crazy with stories. I made a list in my phone. You want to hear it?
No, let's record. Sit down. Don't be nervous.
Can I have my list in case I need it?
Yes. There's nothing you cannot do. You okay. can do whatever you want. Do not be worried in the slightest.
Should we put these, like, position these better?
Yeah.
Where's the camera?
It's our first sponsored episode.
It is?
Kind of.
Look at that. See? It's my specialty. Katie, have you, these numbers?
Elixir bottles.
That's the most frustrating thing I've ever had to do just now, by the way. So fucking... I spent an hour... doing that.
Was it an Instagram?
No, it was the podcast. Oh. And I wanted to get it up before. I guess it doesn't.
But is the real work you're saying is the description. I mean, that's the thing you want. You have the audio and you know the title of it.
It's just a whole rigmarole of creating the post. All right. Are you recording?
This is my dad's side. It's fine.
Is that your bad? What makes a side good or bad?
This nose part is collapsed from cocaine, I think.
That side is and the other side is robust? See, I like this side. Do you want to switch seats? You do? I'll do it for you.
Oh my God, yeah.
Both sides of my nose are bad. Oh, I can't see the monitor now. Howie set up the monitors. We've never had monitors. Welcome, Rachel Heckman, sober in Central Park, to, Jesus, my nose is gigantic, to Dopey. Welcome.
I'm so happy to be here.
Well, it's been a long time, and this is, I mean, we're often sponsored by rehabs and stuff, but we're never sponsored by beverages, and you brought beverages. Tell us what you brought. Let's get all the dirty work out of the way.
Curious Elixirs.
Oh, I love Curious Elixirs. This is a cold one. Number two.
That's my favorite. It has Damiana in it, which is a natural Mayan aphrodisiac.
Stormy pineapple margarita. And we're with Howie and Katie as well. Are they going to taste it too?
Yeah, they can taste it too. That one's not the cold one, though.
Fruity, a little acidic, but pineapple-y.
It's here. Pretty gingery.
Oh, gingery. You want to try it, Howie?
Yeah.
Here. Howie, you have to say it's good, though. That's
so you have to. You want to flip it over one, so we don't have to. That's the pomegranate Negroni Spagliato.
Listen, we're not going to get so crazy into this. Rachel, we met, how many years ago did we meet?
I think we met, I don't know.
This is delicious.
Right?
Yeah.
I've done three Dopeys.
You've done three Dopey Cons.
Three Dopey Cons.
You refuse to say Dopey Con.
Dopey Con.
You call Dopey Con Dopey.
Dopey Con.
Which might sound cooler than Dopey Con.
I've done three Dopey Cons. I remember our first meeting was at Ralph's.
Ralph's is a coffee shop on 5th Avenue.
Yeah.
Tara introduced us.
Mm-hmm.
And then you came on to help with DopeyCon, and then you've been doing it the last many years.
Fast friends.
And every year as we start, I say, I get crazy and I yell at you.
Every year you ask me what value I'm adding and why you should hire me and why you should pay me.
It's like an interview.
You're like, remind me again, like, why I'm paying you and why you're helping me.
So why do you do it year after year?
I don't know, Dave. I don't know. I enjoy you're funny. And I enjoy your presence. I know it's crazy to think about, but.
It is. And you grew up in Boston?
No. I actually only lived there till I was four.
Where did you grow up?
People ask me this, I'm like, do you have 10 minutes? It's so hard. We literally moved around every 2 to 3 years, like when I was younger, which was like the beginning of my trauma. But like Boston till I was 4, then New Jersey till I was 6, then Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for 5 years, and then back to New Jersey, and then Connecticut, and then I got sent to boarding school. My parents are crazy. No, they're from Boston, and they wanted to get back to Boston, and my dad's a pediatric surgeon, so we kept moving because of his job, and he got his first real job in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And then my mom and dad just wanted to try to like get back to the East Coast.
And what was your first foray into addiction or alcoholism?
When I was 14 years old.
And?
And so my parents...
Do you want to read your list first, or do you want to go into a story?
No, we'll just go into it. Actually, it was a random summer night, and I was supposed to have gone to the Dave Matthews Band concert, but I had gotten a piercing on the teen tour that I went on that summer. So my mom ripped up my tickets in front of my face.
What did you pierce?
Just like a little thing in my ear. And so I snuck out of my house and met up with kids on a golf course, and we drank for the first time for me, and I ended up losing my virginity that night, and the whole school found out.
How did they find out, and how drunk did you get?
I don't even think I was that drunk. I remember we were like chugging like gin from a big handle that my friend had stolen from her dad's like liquor cabinet. And they found out because there was a guy who liked me, and this was his friend. And he found out, and he spread it around the whole school. And my mom ended up getting a call from another parent. And it was so everyone found out that I had lost my virginity. So it didn't even really count.
So first drink, first sex, first Dave Matthews Band show.
That I missed.
That you missed.
Yeah.
And was there any drugs or just the drinking?
No, that was just the drinking, but it pushed me into the whole school, like knowing who I was and people talking about me and rumors going around and me kind of feeling like, oh, everyone thinks I'm this like fast kid. And like then I kind of like leaned into the stereotype after that.
Because it's like, oh, they're saying my name, so I must be cool. And if I do this.
Or it's like I already had a reputation. So it was like I was like, okay, I already have this reputation. I don't have anything to lose, whatever. And I was friends with the older kids.
How old were you?
I was 14.
Yeah. So what do you remember about that experience? Not like the details of the drinking or the sex, but what do you remember about the experience of getting a reputation and embracing it or not?
I just remember drinking and feeling the anxiety and things melt away that I had always had and being like, oh, this kind of feels good. But the reputation felt awful. My anxiety was so bad. I would hear whispers in the hallway and think people were talking about me. Like it was super traumatic, that whole experience.
So why do you think you didn't like become a bookworm at that point, or a big nerd, or like an actor?
There was no way I was becoming a bookworm. Like I had undiagnosed ADHD then, and I also was rebellious. I was always like trying to break the rules, right? And so that was right around the time when my parents decided to get divorced, which I was very happy about. I wanted my parents to get divorced. So I think I tried coke right after that. I think I was like also 14 the first time I did my first line of coke. Maybe I was 15. And after that, oh my God, it was just downhill. Like I was stealing money from my siblings, from my mom. I was doing everything I could to get fucked up.
Where did the coke come from the first time?
Well, I was living in a wealthy Connecticut suburb town.
Which one?
West Hartford.
New Bethlehem?
No, West Hartford, Connecticut. Okay, okay. It was easier to get coke than to get alcohol.
And were all the kids were they smoking it at all or just sniffing it?
We would put it on the ends of our cigarettes.
Did they have a name for it?
Oh, I don't remember. But I remember like putting it in the parliament, in the little hard part of the parliament. And like
putting it in the hard part of the parliament.
Yeah, and then we could like do a little bump from it.
So you'd
and then we'd dip it on both ends.
So you'd take a little sniff out of the recessed filter and you'd smoke it out of the other side. I never heard of that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Oh, wow. A first for Dopey.
And did you fall in fall in love with cocaine at that point?
Yeah. I loved cocaine. And I loved cocaine for a really long time. And it got crazier and crazier. Like, we're talking like, you know, I was dealing it at one point.
Hold on. At first, though, you felt as though your reputation... It's like an identity, but you didn't like the identity, and yet you leaned into it.
I didn't really feel like I had a choice, I don't think.
I want to hear about that.
I mean, it was so long ago, but I think I was just friends. I wanted to be friends with the popular kids too. And I was friends with them and they were all doing coke and drinking a lot and not going to school. And I thought it was cool. And I moved around so much that I was a new kid in eighth grade and this was ninth grade. So I didn't have friendships that spanned for 10 years. Like I was still trying to always make new friends. And I thought that like, okay, drinking and smoking cigarettes and doing cocaine and smoking weed, all those things would make me friends. So I just did
not that. To mention they feel good.
Yeah. That too.
It feels good to get drunk and high and all that yeah. stuff and have sex and be in a crowd.
Yeah.
All those things feel good.
Yeah.
So how does it escalate? How'd you do in school? Like, how'd your parents deal with you?
Well, no, it was bad. I mean, I stopped kind of going to school by my sophomore year. I just
of
like
high school.
Yeah.
What were you doing?
Cutting class and chain smoking cigarettes in a parking garage in West Hartford, Connecticut.
So just any day there might be a gaggle of high school students doing what in West Hartford?
Yeah. I mean, I always say there's something in the water in Connecticut because the kids are crazy. But I just didn't care. And I was failing. I failed gym because I refused to run the mile. I was failing like biology. I didn't care. And I think I had like a lot of trauma from like my father and just moving around a lot, and I just like wanted to numb as much as I could. But my mom, who went to an Ivy League school, she was like, "You're not gonna go down this path." So she sent me to boarding school, where I repeated 10th grade.
Were your parents together?
Not then.
So when did your parents break up?
In ninth grade, right when I lost my virginity, and that when everything started going crazy, that's when my parents broke up.
So would you say the divorce was very, very instrumental in your whole life?
I was very happy about the divorce.
Why were they bad
because,
to each other?
No, my dad was just he was a big disciplinarian and he yelled at me a lot and we did not get along. And we still don't really get along. But yeah, I wanted them to break up.
And you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have a younger brother and a younger sister.
So you're the oldest.
Yeah.
Your parents break up around the same time that you first try alcohol, coke, smoking, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So like you're getting out of traumatic, toxic kind of family situation into a like imbibed, high, drunk situation. So it's almost like self-medicating in a way.
Yeah. And my mom, she felt bad, I think, about the divorce and everything that had happened. So she kind of like let us do whatever we wanted. She was kind of like the cool mom. And we would have like on Tuesday nights, I'd invite my friends over to watch Lost and we would chug Papa vodka in my basement. And I would like be throwing up in the bathroom. And I was like 15.
And that was like your mom's way of like giving you freedom.
Yeah.
Instead of a family.
Yeah. Well, she just like was like, I'm not going downstairs.
And where was right. Well, she was like, Rachel's had it bad enough.
Exactly.
Let me give her something to make her feel good.
Yeah.
It's crazy. The echoes of divorce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alec Baldwin said that a uncollaborative divorce is like child abuse. Did you feel was the divorce like instrumental in your addiction?
Yeah.
But it would have been worse if they stayed together.
I don't know. Like,
how did they get along?
They are fine now. But like back then, I mean, my dad was just, he's a surgeon that is always right. So.
And your mom?
My mom, she's so sweet and she's so supportive and she's just wants everyone to get along. But yeah.
Where did he wind up going?
They got divorced. He got his own apartment somewhere. I like didn't see him for a few years. I didn't want anything to do with him. My brother and sister still saw him. But yeah, he ended up getting married again and then divorced again when I was in high school. High school was a very weird time.
And where did your mom send you to?
The Berkshire School.
In the Berkshires?
Yeah, they're actually coming out with an alumni. They're featuring me in the alumni magazine like
wow.
next week. I can't even believe it. They emailed me and said they want to feature me. I was like, oh.
What town was that school in?
In Sheffield, Massachusetts.
Yeah. Sheffield, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of recovery out there now.
Yeah, there was nothing to do up there. But, when I first got there, I was like kind of pissed to be there. But also like I had another fresh start with no reputation. And I could start over again. But I was addicted to cigarettes to the point where like my friends and I would spend the whole day trying to run into the woods to chain smoke cigarettes.
So tell us everything about being like a budding alcoholic drug addict in the wilds of wealthy Sheffield boarding school. Sounds like a good movie.
I mean, it was crazy. Like, so the first few months I was there, like, I was put in all regular classes. I was, like, still not doing well in school because I just couldn't concentrate. And I just thought that there was something wrong with me. And then one day, a teacher asked me if I had taken my meds that day. And I was like, I'm not on meds.
Ah.
And the teacher was like, oh, my God. Because my school wasn't the best academically. It was, like, medium. And everyone there was wealthy and ADHD. And so I got diagnosed with ADHD, and they put me on meds, and everything changed.
So crazy when the teacher, like, just assumes everyone in their class is on meds. Yeah. And if they're acting up, then they obviously haven't taken their meds.
Well, they would watch you swallow the pills. Like, you had to go to health services. They would give you the pills. You would swallow them. They would check your mouth to make sure you actually swallowed it. It was, you know, and if you got caught with any pills in your room, you would get kicked out of school.
And the pills were Adderall?
Yeah.
And were you like, oh my God, like, how did Adderall hit you as a kid?
I remember taking it and being able to focus and do my homework and actually liking school and being like, I'm not broken. Like, oh my gosh, like, this is the missing piece.
I should totally go on Adderall now.
It's a game changer.
Are you on Adderall now?
Yeah.
And are you on the right dose?
It's actually funny you ask because I didn't take Adderall for a long time. I took Vyvanse and I actually felt like too stimulated. And it was only like literally last week that I was like, I'm going to try to change this up because I don't like the way I'm feeling. So I think our bodies are always changing and we all kind of need to like adjust with that. But yeah, I mean, I'm on antidepressants. I'm on ADHD medication. And that's just like...
Is there any other ADHD medication or just the Adderall?
Oh, no, Adderall, Vyvanse, Strattera. I mean, there's a ton of different ones.
But you're on Adderall.
I'm on Vyvanse, but I had Adderall left over from like...
So you're running your own show?
I run my own show.
Oh, that's terrible.
Well, no, my doctor... I talked to my doctor. I mean, he like prescribes me stuff. But I was like, I didn't like the way I was feeling. So I decided like I have to try to change it.
All right, let's go back to the wilds of the Berkshire School.
Okay.
In picturesque Sheffield, Massachusetts.
Yeah, let's do it.
So what's it like?
It was exactly what you would picture like a boarding school to be like. I don't know. We had to wear blazers and these
I could
outfits
see you in a blazer.
And like button-down collared shirts.
It's like the facts of life.
Yeah. I mean, but so my sophomore.
Do you know what the facts of life is?
It's an old comedy show.
It's an old sitcom with girls
with
in boarding
yes,
school and they wore
yes.
blazers.
I do. So Paris Hilton's little brother was at my boarding school.
His name?
Baron Hilton. Wow. He was also new sophomore year.
Do you think rich people name their kids Baron because it's like their royalty?
I think his grandfather was named Baron.
What about Trump's Baron?
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
There's an NBA player named Baron Davis, too. Anyway, keep going.
Well, Baron Hilton was, we became friends because he was a cigarette smoker.
Can I say this is delicious, though?
Right.
Pomegranate, Negroni. I can't read
Spagliato.
It.
Spagliato.
It's delicious.
It is.
All right. Back to 9th grade?
Yeah. 10th grade, round two. He would like take Paris Hilton's Coke and bring it back to school.
How'd you know it was Paris Hilton's Coke?
He told us. He was like, I took it from her drawer. And this is 2006, the height of Paris and Nicole. And so I was like, whoa, where, what am I doing? And we would come to New York City for one night because we had school on Saturdays. And we would go out with him and he would like get us into clubs here in the city. And I just thought it was normal. There was extreme wealth that I had never seen before. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't feel like, I don't know, a normal person. And then I just kind of got used to it. And kids there owned islands and I don't know, just had more money than they knew what to do with. It was a weird time.
What was the status of doing Paris Hilton Coke like?
Well, we had to be super careful. So like, I didn't really do that at school. Like, that I didn't want to get kicked out of school. I knew this was my last chance. If you got caught drinking or doing anything with zero tolerance school, you were kicked out. So,
hold on. How did you wind up in last chance territory? I didn't hear any consequences building up to this.
Well, with my mom, at least. Like, I had almost.
Because she knew what you were up to.
Yeah, and I had almost failed out of public school. Like, where do you go after that if you get kicked out of boarding school? Like, you're kind of like, that's the last stop, at least for me. So I was like, I'm going to do everything I can to not get kicked out of the school. And then when I got on the ADHD meds and I was doing well in school, I was like, oh, wait, I'm getting A's. And people are actually like telling me I'm doing a good job. I want to keep this up. And then, you know, I was in all AP classes and just, you know, I was like the number one student in the school.
Number one in the school? What about weed?
I would smoke weed on the weekends, but I was so scared of getting kicked out.
So you were all about it. you do Paris Hilton Coke on the weekends.
Yeah.
And other than that, you would just take as medicated, as prescribed, kick butt.
Well, I would drink when I would leave. I would leave, try to leave school every weekend. And I would drink. And I would get drunk. And like, but we wouldn't do it at school. Because like, I had like 40 friends that were kicked out the first year I was there.
I'm sure it's easy to get kicked out of a school.
My brother got kicked out of the school.
What for?
Smoking weed in his room. Yeah. Yeah.
And what would you, where would you go on the weekends and where would you stay?
So my ex-boyfriend at the time would come and pick me up and I'd go either to his, like he was at UConn then, so I'd go stay with him or I'd go back to Connecticut and we could only go for one night because we had school on Saturdays. So we had 24 hours or we'd go to come here to the city. So we had 24 hours to like just get fucked up and then go back to school.
And you did all right. It wasn't like alcoholism and drug addiction were destroying you.
Not then. I mean, it was definitely if I had stayed at public school and I hadn't gotten diagnosed with ADHD, I don't think I would have graduated. But being in that environment definitely saved me for a long time. But it just prolonged the inevitable, which was college, which was a shit show.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Dartmouth College.
In New Hampshire?
Yeah.
Which is kind of a continuation.
Yeah.
Of boarding, of like privilege, boarding school, rich people.
I mean, yeah. Like I was so excited to get into my top school. Like my mom went there, my grandfather went there. It was like a big deal. But I didn't expect like the drugs and the drinking that I found there. Like it was crazy.
I always loved the idea of Dartmouth. Like I liked the way the logo looked.
Yeah.
It was like that green and white.
Yeah.
It looked like a place where like I would never belong, but I would like to belong there.
You could have belonged there. You could find any pocket of kind of friend group there, but there was nothing to do except hang in frat basements and get fucked up.
So tell us all about Dartmouth.
Well, so at Dartmouth, the access to
should we try a different flavor?
Yeah, I think so. Do you want to try the blood orange spritz?
Sure.
Here.
Thank you.
I'm going to have some of the rosy rosé.
Okay. Howie, do you want to taste the it's really good.
I'm actually wearing a Curious Elixirs hat.
I noticed that.
Yeah.
It says
I'm all about the branding.
It says stay curious. and for those who aren't watching the video, she's also wearing a salmon hoodie.
It's very bright. It's cold outside and I need to be like very bright.
By the way, are you impressed with my I didn't give you the tour of my parents' apartment.
I mean, I'm impressed with this entire studio.
This is my room where I grew up.
I figured.
How did you know?
Well, I went to the bathroom earlier and I was like, that's definitely Dave's bedroom.
This is pretty good. It's got a little bite, the blood orange.
The blood orange. It has American ginseng in it, so it gives you a little boost of energy.
See, I prefer Chinese ginseng usually, but the American is all right.
You are funny, Dave.
So where,
you were talking about it on the way here.
Thank you. Where? So tell us about Dartmouth. What town?
Hanover, New Hampshire.
Yes.
Yes. And so I had access to things in Connecticut that people couldn't get. Like cocaine, in Hanover. It's hard
to get. Did you bring
the
Paris Hilton Coke up there?
I did not, but I brought the Jamaican drug lord Hartford, Connecticut Coke up there. So I somehow became friends with the Jamaican drug lords of Hartford, Connecticut.
How does that happen?
Just from like being a cokehead. I don't know. I became friends with them.
Wait, hold on. How did you meet the Jamaican crew?
From like going to Connecticut and doing coke and like needing to having different dealers and needing the connects. And I always was good at connections. It's still part of my job now, connecting people. And I'm
it.
A connector.
You are.
But even back when I was using, I was a connector. So I somehow became friends with these like huge like drug dealers in Hartford. And so I remember like we couldn't get good coke up there. And I was like, this is crazy. Like, we can't get good coke. Like, so my friends and I, who had a Navy Crown Vic, so it looked like a cop car, we would drive from Hanover to Hartford, pick up coke, and bring it back. And at first, we were getting it for us. And then people were like, oh, can you bring us back some? And we were like, yeah. So we started bringing it back, and then it turned into this crazy operation.
And you became a crazy cocaine dealer.
But then it morphed into E and acid and Molly and shrooms and like everything.
Were you taking a lot of psychedelics too?
Yeah.
When did you fall into the psychedelic world?
I first tripped really hard my freshman summer and I had been an atheist then. And I was like, I don't believe in anything. And then I took a fuck ton of mushrooms and I was like, I like felt like I talked to God and I was like crying. I called my mom being like, I talked to God. She was like, are you okay? I was like, no. But after that, I switched my major from math. I was a math major to cultural anthropology. And I just got into this whole, like, I loved tripping. And
yeah, 9 out of 10 cultural anthropology majors became drug addicts.
Yeah.
Or maybe 7 out of 10.
Probably.
So you fell in love with the psychedelic.
Yeah. With anything that would get me fucked up. I loved taking ecstasy. I was very into the rave scene. I loved Molly. I would go to all the shows and like the EDM. EDM was like huge then.
So what would you see?
I would see like Bass Nectar and Skrillex and go to all of the festivals. Like I just remember going to music festivals and taking acid and Molly for days.
So is that candy flipping?
Yeah.
Were you like big candy flipper?
Yeah.
And Coke at the same time?
Coke. See, I thought Coke would bring the vibration down. So if I was doing those psychedelics, I wouldn't do Coke. And like, I didn't even really want to drink because I just wanted to be like all trippy and like rolly.
It's funny because you're like pretty woo-woo now.
Yeah.
And I never realized that your woo-woo was sourced in this psychedelic place.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate. Tell us about your psychedelic adventures.
The psychedelic adventures, I mean, there was one time I took an eighth with friends, and they put on Donnie Darko, and I had never seen Donnie Darko before.
You took an eighth of mushrooms?
Yeah.
By yourself?
No, with a group of people. Okay. And we started watching Donnie Darko, and I thought I was hallucinating the bunny. And I remember calling my mom and telling her the world was ending and that she was a great mom, and I was just appreciative. And she was like, do you want me to come get you? And I was like, yes, no. And she still like makes fun of me about that to this day. But no, I mean, it was just at one point I went into a drug induced psychosis and it was really scary.
What happened?
So I had been taking a lot of hallucinogens, and a few other people in the house that I was living in had gone into psychosis, but I didn't know it was called psychosis then. And so it's actually like contagious. It's weird, but I had been pulling all-nighters for school, and I was on a lot of amphetamines, and I took one hit of weed, one hit, and I just went into a different reality. Like, probably for 4 months, I had to leave school, take a medical leave, and I ended up, like, getting a boyfriend with, like, really long dreadlocks, and we moved in together in Hartford, Connecticut, and I was not well. Like, my parents cut me off then. I was pawning
white
my jewelry.
White guy with dreads or black guy?
Black guy.
Black guy with dreads in Hartford, Connecticut.
Yeah.
And you're full gone.
Full psychosis. Like my parents, like I would have $20 and I'd be like, okay, do I get gas, booze, cigarettes, or do I pawn jewelry? I mean, it was a really scary place. And I think back, that was in 2012. And I think back to that time a lot. It's like my worst time of my entire life.
So tell us more about that time.
Yeah, no.
You dropped out of Dartmouth?
No, I took a medical leave. So I took two medical leaves from Dartmouth. One was summer of 2010, which was the first wild time of my life. And then the other one was in 2012. But it was bad. Like between those times, I was like assaulted at school by a friend's boyfriend. I just was so depressed. And then I was doing drugs and I couldn't get out of my own way. Like there was like months where I didn't even see daylight because I would just sleep all day, party all night, try to get my work done, barely scraping by. And like the psychosis, though, is scary. Like I couldn't control what I was saying. I was like, I would like see a stick on the ground pointed in a direction and be like having a crazy like, oh, God is telling me to go that way. Like, I don't remember. I mean, I actually talked to my best friend this morning to try to get her to remind me of things. And my best friend from college. And she was like, do you remember when you went into that state? You didn't talk to me for 3 months because you thought I was like hanging out without you and spreading lies about you behind your back.
So it was like deep paranoia.
Deep paranoia.
What else indicated your psychosis? Like, how else could you describe it?
I literally couldn't filter the thoughts in my brain to what I was saying. So every single thing I thought, I was just saying out loud. And even though I knew it was crazy, I couldn't stop myself from talking. And you were making like weird connections to things that don't exist. I mean, it was horrible.
So it was like you, but on drugs.
Yeah, it was like, I would say it was like a permanent acid trip for 4 months.
Which is very, very, very unpleasant and scary.
And
so what happened after the 4 months?
I was doing all this therapy.
Was your mom worried about you?
Yeah, they were terrified, but they didn't know what to do.
And you were in Hartford with this dread guy.
Yeah. I asked my mom why she didn't put me into rehab at any of these points. And she was like, do you think you would have let me? And I was like, no, absolutely not. There was no way anyone was sending me to rehab. Like, I definitely needed it, but I was still doing coke, smoking, doing all of the drugs. And I was trying to, I actually was able to still get a job, but.
At that point, your drug of choice, were you just a garbage head? Or would you say your drug of choice was coke?
I had a rule though, I wouldn't do coke unless I was drinking because that gave me anxiety. So I'd never understood the people that could just like rail lines. I was like, that's stupid. I need to at least be having a few drinks in me and then be doing the coke.
Well, everybody has their own relationship with neurochemistry and chemistry in general.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't even drink. Like, I'd drink and it wouldn't hit me right. I would do coke and it wouldn't hit me right.
Well, so I had a thing where I passed out everywhere. And so my friends called it the Rachel pass out. And so my best friend would like take pictures of me and she thought it was like funny at first, but then it was scary. Like people couldn't wake me up. And so sometimes people would think I was dead and my friend would have to like be like, no, she's breathing. She's fine. She would actually whisper in my ear, Rachel, I'm taking your drug bag. And then apparently I'd wake up. So my subconscious didn't want anyone to take the drugs that I was dealing while I was fucked up.
Do you think the passing out was just from alcohol, like blackouts? Or do you think it's... What do you think it was?
I think my brain was just like, we can't do, like, we're done, we're shutting off. And I would just like fall asleep. But probably from the alcohol, probably from all the other substances that were always coursing through my body. But I mean, I'm very lucky that nothing worse never happened to me. We were talking about that this morning too. Like, I definitely have guardian angels looking out for me.
Well, I'm glad nothing terrible happened to you. How much drugs were you selling?
We were going through, I think, a few ounces a week. I mean, I was also selling like a whole ounce to a frat, or I was selling a lot of my ADHD medication. Like, I would sit in
an ounce of coke.
Yeah, or a few ounces a week.
You must have been making a lot of money.
Yeah,
and doing a ton of coke.
I was doing a lot of coke. And like, people followed me around like puppy dogs. I loved it. I was like, oh, okay. Like, I was like, just had drugs for everybody. But I was sold a lot of my ADHD medication. I would like sit in the library and just like sell it from the library.
But how did you exist without it?
No, I would tell my doctor that someone stole the prescription so I could get more.
How many times do you get away with that? Seems like a very terrible doctor.
I also would stockpile it and I wouldn't take it every day. So like, I don't know. I had all these systems, but I made it. Yeah, I did. But I didn't have like money. Like I was just like putting it all up my nose or doing all the drugs or getting alcohol.
And what about downers? Any downers or just alcohol?
I never got into painkillers. I never.
Or benzos.
Or, well, I was actually prescribed Xanax and stuff, but I never abused it. Like for some reason, I liked the uppers. I also kept having friends die from painkillers. So I didn't go there. Like, I had a really firm rule. Like, I tried it once or twice, but, like, I was not about that. Like, I couldn't. I had friends that would, like, take handfuls of Roxy's and, like, just down the, and I was not for me.
How did the business blow up in your face then, or did it not?
The drug deal, it never did. I got away with it.
So why aren't you dealing drugs to this day?
Well, I mean, I stopped. I mean, at one point, at a certain point, like I got nervous about things, but I also like eventually wasn't in college anymore. I did end up graduating. Took me 7 years.
So you're with Dread Guy in Hartford, and then you just go back to school. How did that end? Did that end in a horrible way?
I think I broke up with him, and my mom helped me go back up to school, and I was able to finish. But it was hard because I was up there. All my friends had graduated. I was older than everybody else. I mean, my poor little sister. She was at Dartmouth, and I was there her entire 4 years. She was there, and she's 4 years younger than me. I shouldn't have been there at all. Like, she wouldn't even tell people her last name. She didn't want people to know we were related.
Well, I don't blame her for that.
I know.
So what was your plan? Why did you want to finish so badly? Why did you want to finish there? And what did you want to do?
Well, I felt like I had gone through so much. Like, how could I not get the degree? Like, that would be crazy. And it was so important to my family. And I knew that later on in life, like, I would need a college degree. So I didn't give up. And it was, that whole experience was traumatizing of trying to even get my degree. But I didn't give up. And I got it. But then I didn't have a job for the whole first year after I graduated. I was like living in South Williamsburg, doing all the drugs, going out. I mean, so depressed, could barely get out of bed. But like somehow, I don't know. I still was making money. I was like subletted out the other rooms in the apartment that I was living in because I had moved in with friends. They moved out. And then I was like charging way more rent, obviously, for the other rooms. So like I was always a hustler.
You've always had a great entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah. And look, I have my own business now. It's crazy.
It's not crazy. It makes sense because we do what makes us feel good.
Yeah.
You know, drugs made you feel good, but hustling made you feel good. Going out made you feel good. And these were like things you didn't want to abandon. How did you walk away from selling drugs, though?
I don't know.
There was no arrest?
No.
It was just like, school's over, I should
I was arrested once, but it had nothing to do with selling drugs. It was actually really crazy. I was on acid, and it was July 4th, and I was in Rhode Island. And it was the whole circumstance of getting arrested, it was stupid. My friend's boyfriend's friend had called the police and, like, whatever. I had had my purse stolen, and I was making a scene in the street, and so they arrested me. And I was in a little white dress and heels and, like, tripping balls. And I remember sitting in the little jail cell screaming at the top of my lungs, like, this isn't like Orange is the New Black. Like, I was saying the craziest shit.
What did they lock you up for?
My bail was $50.
Why though? Probably disorderly conduct or something.
I don't, but I didn't have my purse. And I remember like screaming so loud and I was like, I'm gonna have a panic attack. So the officers went to the house I was staying at, got my Xanax and fed it to me through the bars to shut me up.
That seems like a good choice.
I was like, I got what I want.
So you had enough sense to know that you weren't meant to be a drug dealer.
Yeah.
And so you were like, fuck it. I'm gonna go to Brooklyn, get a job. Sell a little ADHD meds on the side, but you kept drinking and doing coke.
I didn't want to be a drug dealer. It kind of just happened because it was like there was an opportunity.
You had drugs and people wanted them.
I had access, and people wanted them. But yeah, that's exactly what happened. I went to Brooklyn and I was like, let me try to be a real person, but I couldn't get out of my own way. Like, especially with the coke and even with the going to the raves and still taking acid and Molly. And, you know, I did all of that through all my 20s. And the drinking, though, was always like, drinking. Like, it was just always, you're allowed to drink. Everyone drinks.
Especially, like, when you're a budding, like, up-and-comer in New York City who likes alcohol.
Yeah.
And likes going out.
Yeah.
So what happens then?
So I ended up meeting this guy who was from Italy, and I had lost my job, that first job, and I was between jobs, and we met. And I don't know, I became so codependent. I mean, I was already kind of codependent at the time. And I was like, we have to be together. Like, so he was going back to Italy. And I was like, I'm going to come with you. So I went with him. But we went to Ibiza first. And we were on our way to an Avicii concert, which actually was Avicii's last concert looking back. And we were trying to get drugs. And he was going really fast on the scooter that we had, moped. And we got into an accident. I ended up going flying across the road. All of the skin on my leg, like, was gone. And I was really hurt. And so I stayed in Italy for 3 weeks, and his parents took care of me. And I remember just looking at him being like, we need to get married. And he was like, you're crazy. I was like, I know. So I came back to the U.S. and I figured out how to get a K-1 visa.
So he decided, because you said that he should marry you.
Yeah. I was like, we're getting married. And he was like, okay. So I got him. We got him a K-1 visa.
Why did you want to get married so bad?
I don't know, Dave. I made really stupid, impulsive decisions back then. But I also didn't tell anybody in my family or my friends. I kind of kept it a secret.
So do you think you did it because you figured if you were married, that's a success?
I guess so.
Or did you feel like if you had a husband, you'd be taken care of?
I didn't even want a husband. I just wanted to be with him. I don't know why. I just, like, he made me feel safe. And, like I just thought, like, that's what I was supposed to do. I was not in my right mind. So we had, like, a secret marriage at City Hall. And we had 90 days to get married when he got here. We got married on the 87th day.
Mm-hmm. I never heard you say my ex-husband or my anything.
Yeah.
I've never heard you mention him in all of the conversations.
I know, I told you
we're going to
be surprised.
Okay. So you marry some dude at City Hall, this Italian. Does he speak English?
Yeah.
Is he like, let's get a pizza tonight?
His name is Giuseppe.
His name is Giuseppe?
Yes.
Giuseppe. We've been a friend for years. Was it like that?
No,
Did he have a broken accent?
No, he spoke really good English, actually.
Okay.
But
did you make homemade pasta every night for him?
I don't cook.
What was his favorite choice of pasta? Did he like gnocchi?
He did like gnocchi. He liked spaghetti. He liked all of the, you know, I would go, he was from Capri. So I would go to Capri with him every summer and his parent, and we'd stay in his parents' house. His parents didn't speak English.
He wasn't Jewish either.
No.
So
no,
hold
but,
on.
But a funny story about that. His parents came to visit us once and he said he was going to handle their accommodations and he got them a hotel in Brooklyn and it was in the Hasidic neighborhood where everything was in Hebrew. And these people don't even speak English.
But he figured, oh, I'm making the Jew comfortable.
I don't know what he was thinking. It was really bad.
So you and Giuseppe are living your weird life.
Yeah.
Having pizza, going out, doing your thing.
Well, yeah. But he was against Coke and all those drugs. So I actually kind of stopped doing drugs because of him. So he didn't want me doing Coke. And he didn't want me, you know, getting fucked up like that. So I would either do it behind his back or... It made me calm down. I think subconsciously I knew I would calm down with the partying.
So why didn't you stay with Giuseppe and have children and stuff?
No, we were not right for each other.
So what happened?
So it quickly became apparent we weren't right for each other. And I think I was like, oh, shit, I got myself into a situation I don't know how to get myself out of anymore.
Well, how did you know you weren't right for each other?
We would fight a lot. And he was like, he is an Italian Leo, okay? He was like very strong-willed and like he was annoying. So
where does he live now?
I got him. He got a 10-year green card. So he's probably here in the city somewhere.
So it just did he like beat you with his shoe or anything?
No.
It was okay.
It was.
It just ended badly.
We just didn't get along. And I would drink more and more because I was like, how do I get myself out of this? I'm like, I can't live this reality. So I just would drink all the time. And so, yeah. And then I just.
Because you were depressed that you were in an unhappy,
unproductive
marriage.
I was just depressed. I was depressed probably like up until I got sober. Like I still struggle with seasonal depression now. Like I do. But I mean, I was constantly depressed and angry and sad and just miserable pretty much. So I would just keep drinking and I don't know, then repeat and wake up with a hangover and repeat.
How did the marriage end?
It ended after I stopped drinking. I was 4 months into my journey, and I remember talking to my mom on the phone. She's like, are you staying with him? Because you're scared you can't afford your rent by yourself. And I was like, yes. She was like, I'll help you. Tell him to get out.
So you got sober before you divorced him.
Yeah.
So why did you decide to stop drinking?
Well, okay, so before all of that, I got my dog, which he said no to. He was like, no dogs, no dogs. And I was like, I'm so depressed, and I'm scared. I was scared for my life that, like, I was like, I need to take care of something else in order for me to not want to like literally kill myself. Like I was suicidal. Like it was really dark time. So I went to this rescue event. I saw my dog and I was like, that's my dog. I'm taking him home.
Why'd you name him George?
Well, first I tried to name him Cairo because he's from Egypt. He's from Cairo. And the first night that I had him, I passed out from whiskey because I was a whiskey drinker. Passed out drunk. And Giuseppe comes home and George is like, tries to attack him. Because George is like, who the fuck are you? So Giuseppe hated each other. But George saved my life. Like, he really did. Because I had to walk him. I had to, like, take care of him. I was like, why are random strangers talking to me on the street? Because I have a dog. Like, I didn't understand the, like, you know, people talk to you when you have the dog. But, yeah. So George was like, he was my buddy then.
But why did you change his name from Cairo to George?
Well, Giuseppe kind of looked at him one day and was like, don't you think he's like more of a George? And I was like, I do, actually. He was curious. He has gray hair. He just like, his vibe was George.
He has gray hair?
Yeah.
So what makes that a George?
I don't know. He just looked like a George.
So it's somewhere between Curious George and George Washington.
Yeah. And George of the Jungle. You know.
George of the Jungle is some kind of an ape. Yeah. He didn't have gray hair. I don't see the connection there.
King George.
Okay. Okay. So you fall in love with the dog.
Yeah.
Fall out of love with your husband.
Yeah.
The dog replaces your husband.
Yeah.
And what makes you stop drinking?
So, well, COVID. I mean, I wanted to break up with Giuseppe before COVID. But then COVID happened. And I was like, I don't want to be alone. And I need someone to lug all my shit out of New York up to New Hampshire, where I stayed at my mom's lake house.
I'm sorry. One of my friends who died when we were making the show. Like, he died before Chris. His name was Todd. And we always would say to each other, Giuseppe, we've been a friend for years. I don't know why I think it was a Simpsons bit or something. How did it end? I can't get this out of my head. How did it end with him? Like, what was it? And you never got to say, Giuseppe, we've been a friend for years. You never
Well, okay, so it ended because it was like my 100 days sober and I was so excited and he didn't drink. He like barely drank. We would actually fight over it. Like I would want him to drink with me, but he would be like, no. He went out and got wasted with his one friend that he had here. And that was like the last straw for me. I was like, how could you do it? Was I took it so personally.
Why? You wanted him to drink though.
On my 100 days sober.
But what made you do day one?
Well, it was June 2020. I was drinking by myself in my mom's lake. I had George on my lap. And I remember this guy went running by the house. And I remember thinking, what a loser running on such a nice day. And this voice comes into my head. And he's like, he's not the loser. You're the loser. And I was like, I'm the loser. Why am I the loser? And the voice was like, this man's bettering himself. And you're drinking like a blob alone in the lake. And I remember asking the voice, how do I become more like this man? And the voice was like, he's not drinking whiskey until he passes out on the couch every night.
Who was this voice?
Probably me right now, thinking back to that memory. I know it's very woo-woo, but probably a higher version of myself. Like, I don't know, but it was really, I had like an out-of-body experience. I can still like visualize myself there. And I remember thinking like, I have to stop drinking if I want to live.
One thing you haven't mentioned that you mentioned to me, or Tara mentioned, the incredible weight loss.
Yeah.
So like, when does that, what happens?
Yeah, so I was the heaviest I ever was, probably June, July, whatever, 2020. I mean, even before that, I mean, my weight kept getting worse and worse as the drinking got worse and the food.
Lifestyle.
And I would use food to also numb. And my sister was getting married and I was the maid of honor. And it was just all spiraling out of control. And so we get back to New York City and it's January 2021 and my mom begs me to do Dry January with her. And I said, no, like, I don't want to do Dry January. That's lame. And I did coke on New Year's. And I remember then I had like the 3-day hangover. And January 3rd, I woke up and I was just so done, feeling like shit all the time. I was like, I can't do this anymore. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to try to do Dry January. And I'm also going to do Weight Watchers because I had always tried to do it in the past, but I would drink my points that you get. I was like, if I'm not drinking, I'm not going to drink the points. So maybe it will actually work this time. And it worked.
When do you see the guy run by?
June 2020. So this is 6 months earlier. It took me I knew I had a drinking problem for years. Okay.
And so for those first 6 months, you're just kind of sitting around.
I was trying to see if I was going to have massive withdrawals from alcohol. So I would try to go 1 day without drinking, then 2 days without drinking, then 3 days. And I did have withdrawals from alcohol, but it was hard. And I couldn't really get past like 4 or 5 days. But I wasn't trying to get sober. I was kind of just like testing my body, but I wasn't totally ready. It took like a long time of like mental preparation, I think, to like actually try. But COVID like created the perfect circumstance. There were no parties happening. No one was going to the bars. I wasn't tempted to go out. There was nothing to do. So I kind of was like bored from drinking for so long. I was like, this is so radically different. Let's not drink.
Do you think that that voice that you described started showing itself during COVID?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had never heard that voice before. It was a really crazy experience.
The voice is very important, I think. Because even though I don't know what your voice sounded like, I could hear it in my head when you said it. Like, when we want to do better.
Yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden, you try to do better with something.
Yeah.
And so, Giuseppe's hanging out in the beginning, in COVID.
Yeah.
You're drinking. You're like, holy shit, I'm with this fucking Italian guy. He's drinking. I'm not drinking. My life sucks. I can't afford my rent.
Mm-hmm.
And then your mom's like, you can let Giuseppe go. And then you start like, I should start doing some exercise.
Well, no, what happened was is every time I wanted a drink, I would just start walking. So this is January. I wanted a drink all the time. I would put on 2 pairs of pants and take George out and we'd walk and just walk. And I was living in the Upper East Side and I was close enough to get to Central Park, but I didn't know my way around Central Park. I just would drink in the park sometimes. We would get to the park and then we'd turn around. We'd get to like the Met and walk around the Met area, turn around. But George, Curious George, wanted to explore. So he would pull me further and further into the park. So we explored the park like path by path. And I swear to God, like, just walking. I just started walking like 6 miles every morning in Central Park because I didn't know what to do with myself. And that's how I lost like 80 pounds.
80 pounds.
Yeah.
And that's also how you got sober.
That's how it was. I convinced myself if I didn't go to Central Park and walk 6 miles in the morning, I would relapse. It was super unhealthy. So it would be.
That's not super unhealthy. That's pretty healthy.
I mean, I was really crazy about it. Like, if it would be pouring rain in Georgia, I would be like walking in
the park.
I
can relate to that. I mean, but I think another thing worth mentioning is, you know, 90%. I mean, I'm making up that statistic, but I would say approximately 90% of the guests on our show got sober in 12-step.
Yeah.
You know, and you got sober walking with your dog.
I don't know. Your dog
becomes, it's kind of higher power, D-O-G, G-O-D business. You ever think about that?
Oh, my God. I've never thought about that.
That's interesting. And the regimented nature of the walking, I mean, it's like everything you did was the same as a program without like community and organized dogma and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think it's important for people who are super resistant to 12-step. Were you super resistant to 12-step at that point?
Yeah. So I had been 12-stepped. I didn't know it was called. I didn't know that's what it was called. But at one point when I was living in Brooklyn, a friend who was in the program told me she wanted me to come support her while she shared at a meeting. And I said, okay. So I came and supported her at her meeting on Christopher Street. And later only
was like, that the crazy LGBTQ trans hardcore meeting?
Yeah. And I remember cried the second I got out of there. And I was hysterically crying. And I was like, I relate to everyone in the room. She's like, that's normal. And then I went and got wasted and was like, I can't go back to a 12-step meeting. I don't know. It scarred me for some reason for a while.
But you don't love 12-step meetings to this day.
I don't go to them.
You're back in?
No, but I like them. I enjoyed it. Last summer, I think it was last summer or 2 summers ago, when I was going to a bunch of meetings, I loved them. Like, I just honestly was the time commitment. It was like, took a lot of time to get there and then sit there and then leave. Like, you know.
Give me a break. Listen, I'm going to say this. It doesn't matter, like, how anybody gets sober, and it doesn't matter how anybody maintains their sobriety. Mm-hmm. But like, if you really love them, you'd fucking go.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I mean, I was journaling every night. I look back and I do think I did a lot of things that they probably would have had me do anyways, but missing the community aspect was a huge part for me. I mean, that's why I made my Instagram account.
But I think that's even almost more interesting and really helpful for people out there that are resistant, that there is not one way to do it.
100%.
You were like, I don't want to do it that way, and you were determined not to fuck it up, and you found a way to do it the way you wanted to and not fuck it up.
Yeah.
And for people who are listening, the way Rachel did is she took her dog, broke up with her Italian husband. Did you get a divorce?
Yeah.
Proper divorce?
Yeah.
And she walked 6 miles every day. And then when does sober in Central Park happen?
So
that's why it's called Sober in Central Park.
Literally,
I didn't even figure that out.
It was very literal. Like, so that, you know, I got through, I was still friends with my drinking friends, and we go to Costa Rica, and I was sitting in the bars watching my friends drinking my Diet Coke, being like, this is boring. I think a lot of sober people go through that. And then I was like, this sucks. Why am I doing this? I went to Costa Rica with my drinking friends. They were getting really fucked up. And I was like, I don't have anything in common with these people anymore.
What made you not succumb to using, though?
I was determined to have my streak.
Why?
I was losing weight. I was seeing a physical transformation and my anxiety. It was honestly my anxiety, like the crazy anxiety that I had for so long that I was literally paranoid at certain points in my life was gone. That tightness in my chest was gone. And I felt so confident, and I could do things that, like, I couldn't do things alone before I got sober.
Isn't it so interesting, like, most people, especially like in the recovery community, in the addiction community, they fuck up their lives so bad. The only thing they can do is go to 12-step meetings, and then their life is better. And then they're like, okay, I'm part of this. I do this, blah, blah, blah. You're like, fuck that. I'm not fucking doing that. I'm doing this. And the benefits are so obvious. I'm sticking to it. It's very rare. Do you hear people with that story often?
No. I don't know. I don't know. There's something weird. I don't know what's wrong with me.
You're a very strange person.
I am a strange person.
But, I mean, because you're not in 12-step circles for the most part, but you're doing all sorts of sober events all over the place.
I mean, my boyfriend's a big 12-stepper.
We don't need to talk about your boyfriend. But you're doing all these recovery-based events.
Yeah.
I'm hardcore 12-step. in Dopey, a lot of folk are not 12-step folk. Mm-hmm. But they're not really abstinent all the time either. They're smoking weed. They're doing this. They're doing that. When you're doing your recovery events, are you meeting a lot of people that are abstinent without the 12 steps?
I mean, I don't really ask people.
Because it's none of your business.
It's like really like whether they're sober, sober curious, alcohol free, whatever they identify as, they're there at that event. And they're there to meet new friends that have nothing to do with alcohol. And like, it doesn't really matter to me. Like, I am a coach, so I do coach people. And then it's my business,
right?
What you're doing. But, you know, I think everyone's definition is different. And, like, everyone has a different path, right? Like, I'm about to have 5 years since my last drink in a few weeks. You better come to my party.
I'm not coming.
Pop, come on.
I'm not coming to the party. When is it?
It's on Saturday, January 3rd.
What time?
7:30.
At night?
Yeah.
No way. I can't go to that. I've got kids. I'm not going to some party at night.
But yeah, like I know.
I'll be there in spirit and I support and love you.
Okay.
But I can't go out on the weekend at night. You know that.
I'm not offended.
You know that I don't go out at night.
I know. I was just like, you know, inviting you.
I feel left out. And I don't want to be a jerk. I just don't. I live far away and nobody wants my family to. My family needs me around.
I'm sure.
I don't know why. But I think it's very, very, very inspiring, interesting, and cool that you are as determined as you are without, you know, I love program, but I don't know how, I don't know what I would do without it.
Well, that's why I made Sober in Central Park, because I was like, it was almost 9 months sober. I was scared that there was nothing holding me accountable and I didn't want to drink again. And so I was like, how do I hold myself accountable and also make friends? And I was like, okay, there was no sober Instagram back then. Like, some people had
probably
accounts
better,
here and
the
there.
World is probably a better place then.
I mean, there was no one that I knew of sharing their journey or talking about it. It was not cool. Like, now it's kind of cool when people say they don't drink. It wasn't then. And I just was like, okay, what am I going to call this? Sober in Central Park. Like,
it's very catchy.
It was very literal. And I was like, maybe I'll just post pictures of my dog in Central Park. I didn't even know if I was just going to show my face. And then the third post, I posted a transformation picture of like myself, like a few years earlier and how I was then. Because I was proud of like, I lost a lot of weight. I felt just good. And then I started sharing every day. And I remember someone DM'd me being like, hey, I live in Seattle. Do you want to be friends? I'm trying to form a group of people where we can all have, you know, be in a group chat and have free events for people to make friends. And she reached out to me and I was like, yeah, I want to be your friend. So she was my friend. And then I had all these girls that I was chatting with and I was able to message them whenever I needed support. And it really got me through the rest of that year. And it really showed me the importance of having community and people to talk to about your journey. And then people started messaging me and asking me to help them get sober. I was like, me? I don't know how to help you get sober. Like, it was crazy. So I got certified to be a recovery coach.
And what about sober events?
So I was doing events before I got sober and then just like in my job. And I went to a sober event in summer of 2022. It was a Sands Bar event, Chris Marshall. And I remember going there and making so many friends, like friends that I'm still friends with today. And I was thinking, why do I have to wait for someone from Texas to come here and put on an event to have make sober friends? I was like, there's a hole in the market here. So I was like, I'm going to jump in and I'm going to try to do events. It's hard, though. It's hard to get people to come to sober events. It's hard to like find venues. Where are you going to go? To the bars? To the park? Like
to the stupid church on my dad's street? Without toilets.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So, I don't know. I did events here and there. But sharing my journey was always, like, something I just felt passionate in. And then the beverages, the non-alc beverages, like, blew up. And I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. That's how that happened. And people started sending me packages and started asking me to, like, do stuff for their non-alcoholic beverage companies. And I don't know. It was crazy. It became my new thing.
Well, it's cool. I mean, you're basically providing something, a venue, a culture for people after the meeting, you know, like something else. And also I think that what you do, like forget
social media and all that, but the way you actually stay sober by design, like I'm going to walk, I'm going to be with my dog,
yeah.
I'm going to interact with people in this way, it's very exciting because it shows that like there's a billion different ways to do it.
True.
And then what with your, with Coke though and drugs,
yeah,
when did you walk away from Coke and drugs?
Before, I mean, I did Coke on New Year's of 2020 to 2021. And then that was the last time I did Coke. Drugs before that, but like they had kind of faded away. I was never like addicted, I don't think, to the drugs. I wasn't ever even addicted to Coke. Like I loved it and I wanted to do it, but I wouldn't call myself like addicted.
But you were addicted to booze.
I was addicted to booze.
But I never hear you say alcoholic.
I was an alcoholic. I definitely was an alcoholic. I was addicted to partying. Like right. That's how I describe it. Like an addicted to numbing. And so like, but booze is so socially acceptable that like it was hard to not have a drink those first few months or the first year even, right? So like, it, you know, drugs are a little bit easier, I guess, for me to like not be around. Like you're not going to like a drug bar, right? So I could just like put that out of mind and not put myself in that situation versus alcohol is everywhere.
I think it's also just very cool and great the way people used in different ways and got sober in different ways and that there's all this kind of hope available because it's like, it's not like it might be cool. I mean, I don't think it's cool. You think it's cool to say you're sober on Instagram, which is, I mean, I'm making fun of you, but it's like, it's so messy to be an alcoholic or a drug addict. It's so bad. It's like, it's not like yeah. a little bad. It's like fucking catastrophic. So any way out to lose 80 pounds,
yeah.
to fucking totally change your life, invent a business, invent a career, I think it's really cool.
Thanks, Dave.
Sure, Rachel.
This is like the nicest you've ever been to me.
Is it?
No, I'm so nice
to you.
I've never gotten so many compliments from you, though.
Well,
like, I'll take it.
I think it's important, like, because there's people that listen that don't want to go to a meeting, right? Mm-hmm. That are interested in getting sober, that are interested in shit. And all I ever say is go to a fucking meeting and ask God to remove your character defects, blah, yeah. blah, blah. So I think it's cool that there's something else.
I mean, and now I'm a coach. So if you're out there and you're thinking that, you can come ask me and I could be your coach.
So wait, we're selling so fucking Curious Elixirs.
You set me up there, Dave. And your
coaching services.
You set me up there.
So if somebody wants Coach Rachel to coach them,
yeah.
how do they get a hold of you?
I mean, I'll say I've helped, I don't know.
Have I complimented 40 you too people. Much?
No, I love it. I'm feeling so good.
It might be too much compliments.
I've helped probably over 40 people get sober, just one-on-one coaching, and people that like couldn't string more than 3 days sober together, and like ranging from ages of 26 to 66. I mean, it's been amazing, and I'm just grateful that I get to be on that journey with people. And sometimes it's people who live in like these random states in the Midwest who don't want to go to AA meetings because everybody knows everybody in their town. Like there's so many different reasons, or they don't identify as an alcoholic, but they have a drinking problem. So, I just am acting as another, I'm basically like a sponsor to somebody, but we're not going through the big book.
I wouldn't say that. Don't say that.
That's bad.
You don't say that. Because they can get a sponsor for free. I'll sponsor you for nothing.
Right. But there's
also a
part of that that's like the accountability piece. That
people, the bottom line is that some people want to pay. They feel like compelled to pay. They feel like they will get better results if they pay. And listen, I think I
encourage all my clients to go to meetings. All of them. I make actually like it's an assignment. Like you have to go to a meeting. Like I don't want myself to be the only thing they have in sobriety.
I don't think I've had therapists that were terrible. I've had sponsors that are terrible. Like I think you get help where you can get it, and if it works and if it fits, like by all means.
And I'm not everybody's cup of tea.
Certainly.
I'm looking for someone that is like what I used to be like, because then I understand them. A lot of my clients are like undiagnosed ADHD women that always felt like there was something wrong with them. And I'm like, did you ever get tested for ADHD? And that's a big part of my story, right? And it's so many women are now getting diagnosed later in life, because for so long, people only diagnosed little boys with ADHD. They kind of overlooked women in general.
And you're like a sober hub for a lot of people. Like, we did that crazy fashion show at Big Vision, and we, you know, you're integral to DopeyCon.
Thanks, Dave.
Wouldn't you? I mean, like, I think like you have a cool thing going on.
Yeah, I love DopeyCon,
and I'm glad you made it to our. What'd you think of my dad's apartment?
I love it. Very, I love your dad. Old, I love your parents.
Old Jew.
Yeah.
Well, no, just my that lady isn't my mother.
Oh,
that's my dad's girlfriend, Ginny.
Okay, got it.
And what did you were very nervous about this. Is there anything on your list that you didn't reveal?
Oh, yeah.
What?
The first thing, well, Whippets.
Oh, I love Whippets.
Oh, my God. I wrote, the first thing on my list was Whippet Queen. So my friend made me make this list. One time my friend got a whipmint, as we would call them. A
what?
Whipmint, like instead of shipment, a whipmint.
Nice.
And he got arrested for intent to inhale. That was really
funny. How does that work?
I don't know.
You know, nitrous is like legal now.
Yeah. I mean, you could buy it then, too, at the sex shops and stuff. And
but
like,
now they'll sell you a tank.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Wow.
Maybe, yes.
That's. I mean, there was another time I had a crazy story of, like, falling asleep on an Amtrak train, and because I had taken a Xanax and drank a bunch of wine, like, on the Amtrak train, and I woke up to the paramedics trying to get me off the train, and I had, like, 200 pills on me and, like, a ton of acid. And I remember, like, trying to cause a scene, and they were like, if you don't shut up, we're going to search you. And I don't know how I got myself out of these situations, but I somehow, like, wriggled out of that situation and still got the drugs up to Hanover. Who's it? Mom, don't listen to this.
Is your mom going to listen to this?
I told her not to.
Very good.
Yeah.
Anything else on the list that we missed?
Let's see. Well, I crashed two cars. One was on the bridge, the Triborough Bridge. I had drank a little bit. I didn't get a DUI, though. I really, thank you, spirit guides. Like, I don't know.
Oh, stop.
I swear. Secret wedding, drug lords, car accidents, drug psychosis, intention. I think I got them all.
All right, very good. What were you nervous about?
I don't know.
We've known each other for years.
Well, you kept telling me I wasn't hard enough to come on Dopey.
I don't think I think you said, you told yourself
that. No, you
told
me that.
No way. All right. Did you have a good time on our stupid show?
I did.
All right. Very good. Katie, you have any questions?
I'm so sad.
Howard?
No.
All right. Anything else for Curious?
I mean, Curious is amazing. They're adaptogenic, non-alcoholic beverages that they're not supposed to be like alcohol. Like, it's a totally different option, and they're good for you. Every ingredient's like good for the body. There's no preservatives, no added anything, and like each of these different ones have different adaptogens that like make you feel something.
What is an adaptogen?
So it's like an herb or a root that literally adapts to your body, like what you need. So if you have high cortisol, maybe it will lower your cortisol. It's, you know, it's a Damiana, valerian root, rhodiola, you know, these are all different adaptogens.
All right, cool. And yeah. Where can people find Curious if they want it?
They can buy it online. I have a code, SICP10, saves you money.
SICP10,
Sober
in Central Park 10,
yeah.
To save how much money on their Curious order?
I actually don't know.
Let's say 10%,
yeah,
perhaps.
10%, $10.
And what's the last? What, is this the blood orange?
That's an elderberry champagne cocktail.
I like the pomegranate the best, but this is good too.
Yeah, this is the great. Rosie Rosé.
So check out Curious. Mm-hmm. Check out Sober in Central Park. Get a coach. Follow her on Instagram. And thank you, Rachel.
Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. All right, that was Rachel Heckman, Sober in Central Park. Please send your thoughts. Oh, you know, I forgot to do the Spotify fucking comments from last week's Wednesday show. God damn it. I love the Spotify comments from the fucking show. Do I do them now? I'll never get to do them again. I'm going to do them now. That's what I'm going to do. Last week's Wednesday show was very well received. Nobody gave a shit about yesterday's show for some reason, but maybe it's Christmas. Can look at it like that. Last week's Wednesday show was with the great Bob Forrest. And let's read the comments about Nick Reiner. Fucking 31 comments is crazy. Ray, could you dive deeper on why young people turn to drugs versus those in the past? And how many of these young people didn't seem like traditional addicts? Is this why they aren't getting sober? Most younger sober people, like myself, blah, 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 myself included, I saw what happened to my grandparents and my parents and didn't need to find out how bad it could get for myself. Right on, Ray. Harold Sargent says, the meth has changed. I knew people who did meth for 20 years
and were mostly normal, and something in the last 10 years has changed about it. It's making people insane. It certainly made me insane. Julio Frio says, all praise to Bob. Karina Loico says, I think normal people don't understand the personality change, madness, and brain dysregulation that happens when you are an active addict for a long time. In no way, shape, or form am I defending Nick, but I'm sure this wasn't a consequence of his addiction and he was able to foresee, that he was able to foresee. Often we end up in recovery by very cruel means. Nick had plenty of chances to get sober, and I guess this is it. Fuck. Abel Glow says, I understand all of it, and I had a loved one suffering using. I found help through the walls of NAMI and Al-Anon. The rage I've experienced, I understood what to do when those times came, the smashing, arguing, etc. I would talk softly or not talk, leave, call the PET team, pet team. PET, I wonder what that stands for. I used to know what that stands for. Sleep with a dresser against my bedroom door. I'm so thankful my loved ones have been stable for years. I just knew stress triggers taking communication wrong all played a role in everything. I loved Wednesday's guest. I agree 100%. Great show today with Bob Forrest. You just got into talking about why meth is so different with the connection when the connection was lost. Sam Quinones has written a very informative book about this. It is called The Least of Us, Not the Last of Us. He explains why and how the new meth is made and how terribly different it is from the old meth. Have you read it? Maybe have Sam Quinones on your show. Thank you for your show. We've had him on twice. Go listen. Anita. Arlen Babe says, Nick's addiction and the role it may have played are tragic and worth discussing, but centering the framing on him immediately felt uncomfortable to me as a listener. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you mean by that. David says, I don't know how Bob says this generation isn't real addicts. Using drugs to stop depression at 18 or 19 in Ford is the most addictive, destructive downward spiral I've experienced. It ruins all plans you had or considered and comes for any progress you somehow made along the way, no matter what, unless you beat it. Laura Ann DePiro says, it's disappointing that the media outlets chose to use the soundbite of Nick sharing about his outburst, including destroying inanimate objects. It would have been great if at least one outlet had highlighted, admitted not blaming his parents for his addiction. Thank you, Dave and Bob, for an honest and compassionate episode. This is Tanya. I listened to Dopey a couple of times before the Reiner deaths. I never thought this podcast was about celebrating drug addiction. It's about openness. During the interview with Nick Reiner, the hosts were really good about encouraging openness. Yeah, that's what the show is about. Dustin Orlando says, crazily, I was driving around listening to the old Nick Reiner episodes on the night that he committed this horrendous crime. Kind of fucked with my head a little. Yeah, that's scary. Wishing peace to the Reiner family. Absolutely. Brendan Booth says, I hate myself for listening to this episode. I understand replaying the Nick Reiner Dopey appearance, but why try to insert Dopey into the public narrative around the Reiner deaths when it seemed like Nick cut off contact 7 years ago? All of the speculation and generalizations are grotesque and are a disservice to the positive contributions Dopey makes in the addiction and recovery world. I don't know if you're listening, Brendan, but Bob wanted to come on, and I thought Bob would be a great voice to talk about it, so we did. James DeHart says, God bless Bob Forrest, but if I had a dollar for every time he name-dropped a rock and roll celeb, I would be extremely rich. If I had a dime for every time he mentioned Anthony Kiedis, I would also be rich. CLH says, I think Anthony Kiedis hates Dopey, though. CLH says, if the physicians were changing, Anthony, I know you're probably listening. Just know that if you came on the show, it would be fun. You wouldn't have to tell any stories. We'd just talk about, music and stuff. Jimi Hendrix and the Circle Jerks. Whatever you want to talk about, we could talk about. You know, Anthony Kiedis' father used to be a friend of Linda's when Linda was on MySpace in her 20s. Fucking nightmare to think about that. CLH, if the physicians were changing his meds for schizophrenia, he should have been inpatient, in my opinion. I totally agree. Mucho Gringo says, I love that you left in a full 4 minutes of dead air when Bob's phone died. I didn't even realize. I took it out. Jody Sommer says, never heard someone say so much without saying anything at all. And that lung butter hack is incredibly offensive. I don't remember him coughing. All you need is love. Forrest Mannheim, 28. Don't die. Stay strong. God bless. And toodles for Chris. I hope he has a clean rum. Yeah, me too. Steve Guy, great episode. Such a tragedy. I'm not happy I've missed the Zoom meeting 2 weeks in a row, but always next week. I'm staying busy, still California sober, LOL, but no meth, 3 months, 3 days, no meth, and I feel better every day. Dave, I told a dopey story and sent it to dopeypodcaster@gmail.com. Did you get it? It was a dopey story. I don't know if I have it, Steve. I'll look for it. Thank you, though, for sending it. Merry Christmas, toodles. Stay strong, Dopey Nation. Johnny Walker says, I looked it up. He didn't say that. Celebrity is everything in this country, and if these guys don't learn how to play the media the way that Barack Obama played the media last election cycle and the way Donald Trump is playing the election cycle, we're going to probably get a celebrity candidate. This guy has so many overly simple answers and explanations that don't hold water. Taylor Colonna, yeah, Bob can be polarizing, but I love Bob. Taylor Colonna, since the 90s and the explosion of ADHD diagnoses, mostly in boys around the age 8, like Nick, who have too much energy that medication is required, they then begin to experiment with street drugs because the meds make them feel terrible and don't work. Politics and mental health has dominated the zeitgeist since the early 2000s. The Prince song 1999 has a much greater significance to me these days. JJ says, famous people get accosted to read scripts all the time. I thought you went a little hard on that. Oh, because I wanted him to read that fucking script. I it was 8 years ago and I wrote a script and Nick was my friend for a minute. And I think it's funny. I thought it was funny. Hindsight's 2020 with everything. Cape Fearless, thank you so much for putting these together, Dave. I love you, man. Yeah, JJ, maybe you should take a page from Cape Fearless. Jess Palma loves Dopey. Amy Burt, perhaps if Rob wasn't so focused on his hatred for Trump, he would have had more time to help his son. Sick family all the way around. Love and tolerance is the answer. That was the last one was Amy Burt, and she didn't say love and tolerance is the answer. I say love and tolerance the answer, and I say thank you, everybody, for listening. Leave Spotify comments. Nobody left a Spotify comment on the Christmas show with Ray and my dad. And it has me very, very upset. So if you're listening, go leave a comment on that show. It's such a beautiful show. And leave a comment on this show. And I hope Christmas Eve treats you guys well. I would love your opinion about this 5-day dopey situation. And until we meet again, stay strong, my brothers and sisters in recovery. And Chris loved to say toodles. So fucking toodles for Chris.
I'm doing a cover of Good So Bad because it was on the first episode I ever listened to and it made me want to get clean. I've tried to record this a lot of times and I'm missing Dopey Zoom right now because I don't want to stop until I fucking get it right. God help me. Here we go. I wonder if it'll do me. Okay, I fucked up at the end there, but I'm missing Dopey Zoom right now. So that's going to be my last take. I really hope that's it's okay. I'm going to listen to it and fucking join the Dopey Zoom. Thank you. Toodles.